Good evening. I'll call us to order and note that there are a lot. Supervisor Cruz, will you log in, please? I tried really hard to not say your name. We have 27 members present. That is a quorum. I will call us to order and ask those who are interested to please join in reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome to the November 5th Policy Planning Meeting of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. I would ask that Supervisor Hampson take the chair for our appointment, please. Thank you, Madam Chair. It is with great pleasure that I ask for approval on the appointment of William Schultz, Jr. as the County Board Supervisor for District 11 for a term to begin immediately and expire on April 14th, 2014. I move its approval.
Is there a second? Seconded by Ray Ebert. Any discussion on the appointment of Bill Schultz? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Do you have any other business?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
We'll get there. Thank you. We are privileged to have Judge Dale Pacell here tonight to swear in our newest supervisor. If you would come forward, Mr. Schultz. Dale Pacell, thank you very much, Judge, for being here.
Very well. If you'd raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, state your name.
I, William Schultz, Jr.
Having been elected to the office of County Board Supervisor, District, and then state your district number.
Having been elected to the office of County Board Supervisor, District 11.
Swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
Swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin.
And the Constitution of the State of Wisconsin.
And will faithfully and impartially discharge the duties of said office.
And will faithfully and impartially discharge the duties of said office.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations. Welcome to the board, Supervisor Schultz. I also want to take a moment just to thank my colleagues who spent time a couple of weeks ago sitting in on interviews. We had six good candidates who applied for that vacancy, and I appreciate very much the input and opinions of my colleagues who helped in participating in those interviews. We look forward to working with Supervisor Schultz. So are there other – well, maybe we'll give him a minute. We'll stall while he heads over to his seat to see if you want to say a few words. Some of you may remember that Supervisor Schultz served on the county board a few years back, so hopefully it won't take long before you get back in the groove of things. Jenny's going to make him log in before he gets to say anything, I guess. Supervisor Schultz.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just very excited to be here, very excited to get started, and that's it. Thanks a lot.
Short and sweet. We like that around here. Welcome aboard. Anybody having conference reports or announcements? The hands go up. Supervisor Jerome.
Thank you. On Saturday, November 3rd, I attended the Wisconsin State 4-H
Leader Council's Fall Forum in Stevens Point, and it was a very positive example of 4-H youth development at the state level.
Thank you for your participation. Supervisor Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make those supervisors who are not aware of it aware of a website that deals with ways that local and county municipal governments can save money. It's called, the site is www.smarttowns.org, and I'll be sending everyone an email.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Schrader.
I see we have something to do with veterans here, La Crosse Area Veterans Court.
I think Supervisor Downer is going to make an announcement
when I get to him on the list.
I'm
not going to announce that. This weekend, Freedom Honor Flight is sponsoring a breakfast for all veterans and their spouses, and it's going to be held at the university. There will be a ceremony in the hall there and at the outdoor facility. But please try to attend. It's free for all veterans and their spouses.
Will you say the date and time again, please?
It's next weekend, Veterans Day.
So on the 11th.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. At UWL?
Yes.
In Mitchell Hall?
There's going to be two different, there's going to be the Veterans Hall, which is over by the stadium. There's going to be a ceremony there. The breakfast is in Mitchell Hall.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Supervisor Downer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In front of you, you've got some brochures from you for the La Crosse Area Veterans Court program. It is Veterans Court or Veterans Month this month. I just want to give this to you a little bit to give you an idea of what the La Crosse Area Veterans Court does. Also, a part of that is the La Crosse Area Veterans Mentor Program. They are the full supporter of the Veterans Court. All the money to basically run the Veterans Court comes through the La Crosse Area Veterans Mentor Program. That's a nonprofit organization. And then finally, there's a brochure that we put together, La Crosse Area Veterans Mentor Program, because we're starting to deal with spouses and children with PTSD, which we don't like that terminology anymore, PTSD. We like to call it wounded veterans. They're just mentally wounded, not physically wounded. And we put this together, and the VA bought into this, and you're going to see this nationally now by the VA of what we have put together and dealing a little bit with them. The one thing, again, I do want to point out to you, and we do want to thank, as the director of the program, La Crosse County giving us the space over there, and then the little bit of computer equipment to help us run it, because that's all we've asked for, and that's all we've asked for from the other courts or other counties that we are currently starting to operate with, and we're currently operating with four counties. We have been advised and asked from six other counties to help support them, which we're going on. Not right now, but thank you, but we'll look at it a little bit further. So, but that's for your information, and thank you much again for getting us going. It'll be 2 years old in January. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you for your work with that, Supervisor Downer, as well. Supervisor Pedretti.
Thank you. I just wanted to congratulate or appreciate our staff. We had our PR&D committee. We had electrical issues on Monday night. We were without power here. We had public meetings and public hearings. Our staff took great care of the committee. We ran out of, there was no power at 4:30. Our meeting would start at 5. We start our meeting. Meanwhile, the staff, IT, the facilities, the LEC, because there was electricity in that building, everybody came together and did what needed to get done to get our meeting moved from this building over the next building and to inform the public, because we had public showing up. I just want to say what a great job our staff does again and again and again, but this is a prime example of doing what needs to get done, not making a big fuss. We were conducting our meeting at the same time they were doing what needed to get done, and we just seamlessly went over the next building. So, again, thank you to the staff.
Thank you, Supervisor Pedretti. Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an announcement, and I don't see it anywhere else on the agenda, so I think this is maybe the time to talk about it. You see in front of you a purple sheet, everyone. This refers back to the Health and Human Services Board orientation called Being a Client that I spoke to you about at last month's meeting. Inadvertently, we only provided you with the scenarios for the health department. So this evening, you also have the scenarios for the human services department. So if you could get those filled out, hopefully, this evening, and give them to me by the end of the evening before you go home, they would like them tomorrow at the office so that they can type them up. So I'd very much appreciate if you could get those to me.
And will you just remind us what months are options for us in that far right-hand column?
I think it's actually any time between now and next year around this time, right? I think it's ongoing.
Okay.
So, you know, you can pick a month that works for you.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any questions about that? So that's a reminder to fill that out and turn it in this evening, please. Any other announcements or conference reports? Seeing none, I will call on Mr. O'Malley. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to ask unanimous consent that we move agenda item 11.3 up to this point in the meeting so that our out-of-town bond consultant, who has good news for us, that influences your decision at all, can finish his business with us and get on to his next work. Unanimous consent to move up agenda item 11.3, seeing no objection. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have item 11.3, resolution confirming the sale, determining rates of interest and other details, and levying taxes in connection with the issuance of $2,150,000 aggregate principal amount of general obligation promissory notes, Series 2012-A of the County of La Crosse, Wisconsin. Whereas sealed bids for the notes were received at the offices of the financial consultant in the county in St. Paul, Minnesota until 10:30 a.m. Central Time on November 5th, 2012, which bids are as follows, and you have those on your desk in a blue sheet. There were seven bidders. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the bid of Raymond James and Associates of Memphis, Tennessee, and Associates at a price of $2,221,559.65 plus accrued interest to the date of delivery was the best bid submitted for the notes. Fiscal note, debt service funding is provided for in the 2013 county budget. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Hampson, seconded by Supervisor Kyle, discussion on item 11.3. Do you want to, let's call on Joe Murray, our consultant from Springstead, since he traveled all the way to be with us this evening. And he has good news.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the board. I do have very good news for you. As was reported in the motion, we did receive seven bids on the county's behalf today. The low bid came in from Raymond James and Associates at a true interest cost of 0.68%. When we started this process working with the county staff, we had estimated that very low interest rates at 1.1%, but it came in nearly 50 basis points less. The result of that bidding today will allow the county to save over $13,000 in interest costs associated with the bids. Part of the value of the reason you got such good bids today is also reflective of the county having its AA1 bond rating affirmed by Moody's. That's reflective of your strong financial management as well as your strong fund balance situation and your diverse economy here in La Crosse County. All these are very good things that provided for the good bids today, and we recommend that you award the bid to Raymond James at a true interest cost of 0.6768%. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Mr. Murray? Supervisor Schrader.
What is true interest?
True interest cost works in the time value of money to take advantage of. It was noted in the motion, you're issuing $2,150,000 at a purchase price of $2,221,559. The winning underwriter is providing you more money up front for their interest cost, for their couponing structure for the issue. And by providing that money up front, it allowed them to lower the true interest cost of their bid and allowed them to be the winning bid for your bids today. It basically looks at the cash flow of the interest payments over the term and then puts it into a net present value basis.
Other questions of Mr. Murray? Supervisor Hampson.
A question of you, Madam Chair. Was there a second on my motion?
Yes, Supervisor Kyle.
Okay, I just didn't want this to fail on a technicality. Yep.
Thanks. Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
No. Opposed, signify by saying no. That is approved unanimously. Thank you, Joe. Right up here with the signature right off the bat. Okay, now over to you, Mr. O'Malley.
I've got a proclamation, and Joe, if when one of these presentations start, if I could spend a couple minutes with you on something else. Thank you. Proclamation on Veterans Month, November 2012. How appropriate. Whereas the Veterans Service Office assists and supports La Crosse County veterans and their family members in recognition of the sacrifices and service of veterans to La Crosse County, the state of Wisconsin, and the United States, whereas respect for veterans' achievements and sacrifices on behalf of the nation and the world is ensured, and whereas leadership and advocacy for La Crosse County veterans is demonstrated, and whereas commitment to service excellence while assisting veterans with their applications for state and federal veterans programs is of the highest level. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of November 2012 as La Crosse County Veterans Month and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution military veterans have made to La Crosse County.
Supervisor Schrader moves the proclamation read by Mr. O'Malley, seconded by Supervisor Downer. Is there discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved. Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Members of the board, Madam Chair, we've got a rather ambitious agenda this evening. I've got a number of items to bring you up to date on. And we'll first of all start with an update from our IT director, who will bring you up to date verbally on what's happening with county boardroom automation and those types of things, followed by a number of other additional items. We haven't put all the handouts on your desk because I know you prefer not to do that, but this is not a time for decision-making. This is to learn about a number of different items that are affected within the budget. I think you're going to find a lot of good information that helps recognize how we've been able to control the budget, but also items that will affect and improve the efficiency of your own work, starting out with John's report on board automation and what will happen with the computer systems and items that you actually work with on a meeting-by-meeting basis. So if I could ask John Parshall to come forward and provide you a brief update, and then we'll get into the other presentations.
Good evening. Okay, so I'll start out back in 2011, we created a team that consists of the county administrator, the board chair, IT, and the county clerk. And we put together a bunch of, I guess, a hit list of things we want to accomplish in the boardroom. And out of those lists, we focused in on five key areas. One was to create a new voting program, which you guys are now using and see. We put together a new county board profile pages, which got done and you guys are actually using and enjoy. The next thing we're working on, which we're currently working on now, is to update our current main website page. We're looking to have that done late November, early December. And I'll come to a little more detail updates on that. And the other two items on our list was upgrading the workstations and upgrading the video presentation equipment in this room. So that was kind of our list that we focused on. As a board automation team. So right now we're currently working on updating the website and just give you a few updates on what we're doing there. So basically we put together some criteria and what we want to accomplish. Basically we're trying to create a better search engine and a quicker way to find information on the new site. We're updating the look and feel to a more modern look with better navigation, pictures showing off the county, key areas in the county. We implemented a Google location map that everybody uses out in the web now, so you can find our buildings and our addresses and our locations quickly. We're putting together a new department page that will consolidate and condense contact information, links back to all the departments, probably over 30 some department links that we're doing, so we'll make it quicker for people to find our information. We're putting more emphasis on the county branding and the logo and the title on the new site, putting together clearer footers and headers so you can navigate quicker and get back to the home page easier. One of the biggest items we're implementing is a new calendar feature that will help find committee locations, meetings, the agendas, and the minutes versus what you see today with just a standard text PDF document and links. So you can be able to search by your calendar and dates. And then we're basically doing a little simpler design of the navigation and the total look of the page when you get to it. Right now, over time, it's been over 10 years since it's last been really refaced. It's just a very busy page, and it's hard to for new people coming to that site to find information quickly. So that's kind of our mission. You guys will probably get a demo coming up, in another board meeting, but we're looking late November, early December to launch that. On the equipment that you're currently using right now, we've been riding this equipment a long time. We're pretty proud of that, just from a budget and cost standpoint. I think we're close to 11 years on this equipment. This equipment is older technology. We do have concerns about it running out of gas and steam. It is hard to describe, but the back end component that we have could go at any time. So we put funds in 2012 budget to really work on this and then provide some new equipment. We're not going to do this year because we're going to ride one more year out of it, but we're moving the funds forward for 2013. And our hopes are we're going to basically start replacing that equipment early 2013. We also put some criteria together for that, again, through the board automation team. Our mission is to increase mobility, utilize wireless. All your committee meetings or committee locations you go to now in various other areas on the campus is basically wired for wireless. So you can bring your devices to any of those meetings and be connected at any time. We're trying to be very aware of the costs of each of this equipment. If we just went out and got you the standard piece of equipment, we'd be looking at $1,000 per unit, and that adds up in a hurry when we have probably over 34 units, including the 29 and the upfront people at the podiums to use. So we're looking at a slate type device that's at a low cost. We can have extras if they break, it's not an issue. And you guys can have mobility, portability, and be able to take these to any ad hoc meeting, any location in our campus. You can get connected basically right when you walk in the door. And then as we kind of went through other objectives, we want to continue to promote being paperless, giving you that information away from the boardroom so you can actually work on this information anytime you feel fit, or whether you're at home with your own internet connection or here at work. Along with that, because we're doing such a good job utilizing this equipment, we're going to look at updating the presentation in here. And we're so early in the stages, I can't tell you much other than we feel like we want to move away from the projectors and we want to go to LCD, and we want to have multiple displays so no matter what part of the room you're in, you'll be able to get a better view and see the information quicker and easier. And working very close with facilities on that, and it's just a hard task because of the room, the ceilings. We can't do anything with the ceilings right now, and we do know whatever equipment we bring forward, we're gonna note that we want this technology to be movable, that we can redeploy it regardless of where this building is in the future, in the next several years, or how this room gets reconfigured. So we're focusing on that in parallel with replacing this equipment that's in front of you. I think that's about it for the automation team. We have other things on the list that's farther down that won't happen. We're focused on what I just updated you on, the website, the client machines, and then the presentation.
Questions of John? Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John, what was the cost of the projected new monitors?
We don't actually have that cost right now, but I'm projecting somewhere around $500 to $600. What we're waiting for, you may have seen commercials that are coming out with it's called Surface, Microsoft Surface. Lenovo's coming out with new equipment. Not to get too technical, but right now most of the devices that are out there that are in the slate or tablet arena are Android and Apple. Well, our environment is Microsoft, and we want you guys to be compatible. There's some new devices that are coming out we feel that will fit this environment really well, give you that portability, and allow that compatibility as the office staff that you work with will be using Microsoft components. You guys will have the same components, and it'll be just a lot more collaboration, easier to work with, especially if we want to get to a paperless environment. So.
Supervisor Landry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you see Google in the future of La Crosse County, but you know, through Gmail or Google Docs or anything like that? Because maybe it's a generational thing, but I personally can't stand the Microsoft products. I don't think that they're usable, and I don't think that that's the long-term trajectory of where software is going to go. And I know our university has recently switched over to incorporating Gmail and all the other Google-related tools. So is that something in the future for us?
Not the near future. We just got done reviewing it. And near future is really a year to 2 years out for us, just so you know. Google Apps and Google Mail has validity. We're looking at that. Quite honestly, we'd be looking at that from a cost savings perspective as we look that direction. But right now there's some issues with open records and just the compatibility and where we are with our back-end systems, if you will. So it's not an easy transition for us at this point, but we have reviewed it, and we'll probably look at it for each budget year from this point forward. So,
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Isn't there a way that you can just bring all the PowerPoints up on our individual screens instead of having to put, you know, all sorts of big TVs around?
Yeah, that is an option we'll be reviewing. Right now, there is cost associated with that, so we'll have to judge that cost versus putting displays up. So the general thinking is we might have a couple displays as an option, again, located in a better space with giving the room configuration we have to deal with, and or we will be looking at pushing those displays out to your new devices or these existing devices. So we haven't ruled that out. We are looking at both.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
But we also need to think about others in the room who don't have a monitor in front of them. So the public, the media,
yeah,
the
but
recording.
They can get by with one then instead of having to have them all over for us. It just seems if we're going to have the facility here, it can't be that difficult to bring it up. And then it makes it real easy to see.
Yep, definitely is one of them. It's a top option that we've been reviewing.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Other questions for John? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you, John. I hope that illustrates that we're constantly trying to innovate but also save dollars. The thin clients have lasted for almost 11 years now, so we've gotten our money's worth out of very old technology, and these items will come back through the executive committee and the full county board, because obviously as we change technology, there will need to be orientation and training and those kinds of things as well. John and his staff just do an excellent job for our entire operation. Really appreciate that. Okay, the next items that we really want to touch on, we'll start out with a team of people dealing with the jail costs and the jail issues that we've got. Just to remind the entire board, we've talked about this several times. One of the issues that we've got is an ongoing challenge that you've talked about in policy planning about what's happening with the jail population. Jane Kleekamp is going to start out and really give us an overview of some of the issues, how we compare to other counties, some of the issues related related to jail population. We've also, of course, have the sheriff to talk about some of the staffing issues and what our options are that are there, as well as Judge Gonzalez has been kind enough to join us and talk about some of the strategies that are being involved with all three of the members that are here, as well as probation, parole, and the entire community, how we deal with trying to control the jail population. Because just to remind the entire board, what we're talking about is whether or not to take that 1% increase, 1.15% increase in property taxes supported by the value of new construction, and whether or not to put that all into road maintenance or to put it into the cost of opening up the additional pod, and we'll get into some of those details, or some combination of that. So we have, again, a very ambitious agenda, because we have a couple of additional presentations from Human Services and then a wrap-up by myself. But I wanted to welcome, with the board's permission, Jane Kleekamp, who will walk you through some of the details, some very good information that has gone to the Criminal Justice Management Council. And, of course, Judge Gonzalez and the sheriff are also available for additional questions. So some of this is information that the Criminal Justice Management Council has seen, and some of it is new information that we talk about with the strategy. So with the board's permission, I'd ask Jane Kleekamp to begin the presentation. This is on your desk, by the way, so if you need to follow along, you can take notes, but the information is provided. So,
welcome.
Thank you. So the Criminal Justice Management Council had wanted to have a county comparison amongst different counties within Wisconsin. And while it gave us some answers, it probably gave us a lot more questions than what we started out with. But it will give you, I just want to give you a quick overview of the different counties that we reviewed. So the six counties that we paid attention to were Marathon, Sheboygan, La Crosse, Walworth, Eau Claire, and Fond du Lac. And you can see that the populations are very similar. And then I circled in red where they are within the states. You can see the placement within the state also. There are things called index crimes and non-index crimes. And you can see this group of index crimes are property crimes. And on the right-hand side, it talks about them being burglary, theft, motor vehicle theft, and arson. And in 2005, that's the blue line. La Crosse was sort of average-ish in that. We were slightly above average. The 2000 average for the property index crimes was 2,259, and we had slightly over that. And in 2010, the average was 2,070, and we were also over that. So you can see where we have been, in not a good way, above average on what would be considered index crimes, which were property crimes. The next set of index crimes are violent crimes. And the 2005 line, which is the blue line, the average was 127, and La Crosse had 154. And these are per 100,000 residents. So for every 100,000 residents, these are the number of crimes. And then in 2010, that had increased to 181 per 100,000 residents. And again, what's considered violent is murder, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. So they're pretty specific on what they keep track of. Then there is something called non-index crimes. So again, I'm sure the sheriff could do a much better job than I can about explaining the difference between index and non-index crimes. But for the purpose of this, the non-index crimes are drug crimes, things like disorderly conduct, vandalism, prostitution, simple assault, fraud, OWIs, and lots of others. This is where we far exceed the average. And these are total crimes. These are not per 100,000. This is slightly different. So just so you know, you're looking at a slightly different type of number. But you can see that in 2006, La Crosse had 8,914 of these, when the average in 2006 was 6,674. And in 2010, La Crosse had 10,165, where the average was 6,803. So that's one of the things that we're going to drill down a bit more and see why that might be. I've had a conversation with someone from the City of La Crosse Police Department. He's interested in finding out what the difference is in that, too. This is one of those things that, to get the answers to this, it takes a lot of sort of reviews and trying to figure out what's going on. So this is the first kind of attempt to get the information. Then to give some jail comparisons, these are a little bit hard to read because there's I'm sure someone could figure out an easier way to do this, but I was trying to compare all the differences. So the blue line or the blue color at the bottom are Huber inmates, work release inmates. The red are secure inmates which tend to be the majority of the people who are incarcerated. Then if the jail has boarders, meaning they're boarding someone from another county, that's that sort of lime green color. And the only county I believe that actually has boarders is Sheboygan, and they had 5 on an average. So it's not as though it was a really significant number. The number of people who are housed out of county, meaning the county was housing someone in a different county, they were boarding someplace else. Eau Claire had an average of 38. Marathon had an average of 11, and I think that was it. And then for electronic monitoring, Fond du Lac had an average of 41 people on electronic monitoring, La Crosse had 81, and Marathon County had 31. That was the 2005 numbers. Then to forward it a bit to the 2011 comparisons, the same thing, Huber is the blue color at the bottom, red are people who are in the secure jail. And then the borders are, again, that sort of limish green color. So Fond du Lac was the only county that had borders. They had an average of 34. And then housed out of county, Eau Claire had 22 people housed out of county, and I think that may have been it. And then the people on electronic monitoring, Fond du Lac had an average of 12, La Crosse had an average of 70. And I counted only sentenced people in this. I did not count the people who are on pretrial supervision because that's a little bit different type of situation. Marathon County had an average of 18, Sheboygan 35, Walworth 17. So you can see the totals. Then these are total jail populations. So again, it's people who are in jail, people who are on work release, and people who are on electronic monitoring. For the 2005 is the blue, 2011 is the red. The counties that have criminal justice coordinating councils or criminal justice management councils are circled. So Eau Claire, La Crosse, and Marathon all have criminal justice coordinating councils. Eau Claire's jail population has decreased by 28%. La Crosse's has decreased by 25%, and Marathon's has decreased by 16%. Fond du Lac, if you don't count the people who they're boarding for other counties, their jail population has increased by 12%. Sheboygan's jail population has decreased by 10%, and Walworth's population has decreased by 6%, or excuse me, 4%. Sorry, so apparently I'm. But as you notice, those numbers are all 2010 numbers, those crime numbers that we had. The average daily population didn't increase at the same rate as the crime rate in 2010. We were very steady in 2010, 2011, we're steady, steady, steady. And then it tended that we opened the jail, and that was when we had the increase in numbers. So the jail opened, the expansion happened, and then our numbers expanded. And you'll see a little bit more about that in a second. So you can see how, again, men is the blue along the bottom, receiving is the red, and then the women's population is the, again, sort of lime green color. This is just for the 2012 average daily population by month. There's been an increase of over 45 inmates every day between January and October. Obviously, we've just had a really huge increase in the numbers. The bookings, which have last year, the average number of bookings per month were 432. This year, the average number of bookings per month has been 526, so almost 100 more every month. And it's a little bit, at the same time, releases, which tend to run a little higher than bookings or about the same, have been less than the bookings. So that's why one of the reasons why our jail population is higher is obviously not as many people have been released as been booked. So you can see that the average daily population has been increasing pretty dramatically. And again, we started working on it, probably started taking pretty good notice of it in August, and then have been working pretty regularly in different committees since that time. Jail beds, just to give you information about this, when jail beds are counted, one can only count the housing beds. You can't count receiving or medical. You can only count the housing beds when you're looking at numbers, and that's a state rule of some sort. And Steve, anytime he starts to make a negative face, just tell me so I don't keep talking. All right. So for La Crosse County, because of our bed population, or the number of beds that we have, 174 is 80%, which is considered capacity. So that when we are at 80% of our jail population, that's when we are considered full. And that's due to a lot of reasons like classification and just being able to move people around and that you don't have people housed next to each other who might not get along very well together. So you can tell that when 174 is 80% of our capacity, in October our average daily population was 213. So we were way above what's considered capacity. And in, the dark line across the page is our average daily population for 2012. So you can see that we have been way above what we should be at. The total numbers of beds in the jail is 266. But again, for the purposes of counting capacity, we can't count all of the beds in receiving. Sorry. There we go. At the same time, the numbers that we've been supervising in chemical health and justice sanctions has also increased. So the numbers that we consider for jail reduction, meaning bail monitoring and sentenced and some of the OWI court people, our numbers have gone from an average of 220 people a day to 256 this year from last year. So we're seeing quite a few people, an increase in people this year. And also we, you know, we work with a lot of other people. So drug treatment courts, some of the people in OWI treatment court who are not on electronic monitoring, we do a lot of testing for human services and diversion agreements out of the DA's office. Those numbers have also increased so that we're seeing an average of 57 more clients also between January and September where we're seeing a lot more people on any given day.
Okay. So we do have an area in the jail that we're not currently using, and that's one of our direct supervision pods. And if you remember, the difference between direct and indirect supervision in the jail is the indirect supervision areas is where the jailers are on the outside and they go in to tend to the needs of the inmates and then leave that area again. The direct supervision area is where we have a jailer in with the inmates 24 hours a day, basically. And if you remember when we planned the addition for those of you that were here, part of the reasons we did that is the direct supervision area has been found to be much safer area. It's much more conducive to programming. And it also, along with the safety, goes persons that maybe, for example, mentally ill or high risk to be assaulted by other inmates are much safer there because we have a jailer in that area at all times. I should also add that most of our other, we call them pods or blocks, have about anywhere from 17 to 22 beds, and our direct supervision area has 57 beds. So we also are able to dramatically increase the number of beds. So there's a lot of benefits to having the direct supervision. I know that the National Institute of Corrections strongly recommended that we include direct supervision in our facility when we were remodeling and adding the additional space. So we do have 257 a bed direct supervision pods or blocks. We're only using one of those at this time, and the reason is because of staffing. I've talked to you before, for those of you that were here may recall that I've talked about how down in our receiving area, in our medical area, we had anticipated during our initial planning that we'd be able to use just one staff member in that area. What we found out, though, as time has gone on, is that the number of mentally ill coming into our jail has dramatically increased, and I think some of the reasons for that might be less access to services, but we're also finding many more persons that are coming into our facility that are drug addicted, and especially those that have been are addicted to heroin. There is a certain protocol for opiates that we have to use, and it's a number of days that we have to try to wean them off of the heroin, and because of the high needs of the persons that we're keeping down in our medical and receiving area that wasn't anticipated, we find that we need two jail staff down in that area 24 hours a day. That's where we lost a staff person to actually be in the direct supervision pod 24 hours a day. So we didn't open that second direct supervision pod. for 24 hours a day. Now, if we were going to do that, we're saying that it would take six jailers. I believe from our personnel department in the past, we've used the figure of 5.8 to cover a position 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that's the 3 8-hour shifts, but it would take about six jailers to do that. And then, as you can see, the expense for those six jailers, if we're to open up that additional pod. Of course, what we're trying to do is we're working very hard not to have to open that additional pod, and hopefully we can be working successfully with those persons that have the ability to put inmates in the La Crosse County Jail to relook at who they're putting into our jail and for what reasons, and we're hoping that we're able to reduce the population to a point that we won't have to add the additional six staff, which would require us opening the, which would be required if we open the other direct supervision pod. So,
if I might, part of what one of the reasons we wanted to put that slide in was to tie that into the dollar amount that we put in the budget, because we wouldn't expect to do it immediately January 1 if you did decide to open up that pod. In addition to that, the two slides that follow are the actual floor plan of the jail. I think there were a couple of supervisors wondering how does it become six jailers and where would that actually work. So I don't know, Sheriff, I wish we would have had time to provide a little bit better graphic, but if we could try to point out how that actually works. Six jailers work out of one position, as I understand it, and which one has pod L? I'm trying to remember.
Sure. I believe if you could go one more slide.
Sure. There you
go. Oh. I probably need to point out.
There's a pointer.
Is there a laser there?
Okay. Yeah.
So this is, are you able to hear that? So this is the second floor of our jail, and this area right here is the area that was built in 1997, and each one of these areas is an area that we have inmates in. These are some of these 22 or 17 bed pods or blocks, and then right here we have one jailer that's in that control area at all times. So we have two jailers that go out to meet the needs of these inmates here, and then which is about, it was 172. We've lost a few beds there with the remodeling, but roughly around 170. And then we have two jailers that meet the needs of these 170 inmates, one jailer that stays in here and keeps an eye on what's going on. And then over here we have the two direct supervision pods. There's one here and there's one here. And so this pod we presently have open, and in this we have the 57 beds and the one jail staff that stays in that pod at all times. This is the pod that we don't have open right now that we would we may need to expand to at some time in the future. I'm not sure if there's any other questions regarding what I'm trying to. Maybe that's the best way to handle it.
So questions about the layout? Is that what you're asking? Or
and the staff.
Supervisor Meyer.
Not about the layout. But
your microphone? Oh.
You said earlier you wanted to reduce the number of people in jail. How are you going to accomplish that?
We get into that in the rest of the presentation.
Yeah, that all of this has been a preview of that. So any questions on what we've covered up to this point, and then hopefully we will get to the answer to Supervisor Meyer's question. Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you. Would you specify, please, where the women are housed there? Would you point that out?
Sure. The women are being housed in this area here. There should be there's one block, two blocks, and three blocks right here. So it's these three blocks that the women are being housed.
Okay, and there's no direct supervision for them at this time?
We don't have direct supervision for them at this time, but we did, when we did the remodeling, try to make some changes that the men don't have. For example, they have movable chairs, they have carpeting, we put skylights in, so we did try to make some changes for them also that the men in the rest of the jail presently don't have.
Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you show us where the programming occurs?
Sure. In the old jail, excuse me, the old part of the jail, we have programming that occurs back in this area here. And that was one of the problems, is we just simply don't have enough programming. This is the only room right here for programming. In these new blocks, we have, for both sides, these are all classrooms in through here, and then we have other areas inside the pods themselves where we can have small groups, and there's one area here on the corner, one here on this corner, and then, like I said, these are several classrooms on each side of here, so there's a number of different classrooms and different areas that groups could meet in the direct supervision area.
Supervisor Paff.
Thank you. I was just wondering, you said that in the near future you may need up to six more jailers. How many jailers do you have currently for the population you have in there right now that
for
you think you
total amount of jail staff?
Right. Well, you say you need six new jailers.
Right.
So in what you're considering jailers right now that are taking care of, that could take care of the 180 or whatever.
Right.
What is that number?
Well, we have, if you're just talking about that number, we have one person that stays in that control area, and then we have two jailers that go out and tend to the needs of the 180.
But you're saying it takes 5.8 to cover one position.
Okay, right.
So how many jailers are on staff to cover the current staffing demands as it's configured and populated now?
Right now we have 53 full-time jailers.
Is that what you were asking for, Supervisor Paff? Okay.
And for board members, that's actually listed on page 6 of the salary information at the back of your book. So if you want to see the number of sergeants, jailers, jail program coordinator, but detail is actually included at the back of your budget book.
Okay, can we, is that it for you?
I believe so.
Again, just to introduce the last part of this presentation, what we've tried to do is to give you an overall view on how we compare with other counties and the individual issues of our jail population. Then we wanted to give you the context of why we have a placeholder within the budget that if we have to open up that additional pod to satisfy that increased population, how you would need to have six jailers to staff that one position on a 24-hour basis. Obviously, we made some assumptions about insurance and those types of things. And last but not least is really what is the system doing, judiciary, sheriff, probation, parole, justice, sanctions, to try to figure out is there a better answer than just having to open up that additional pod. So that's the intro to how we've put this presentation together. So I didn't know who wanted to.
Hopefully this will answer Supervisor Meyer's question, perhaps one that he was asking on all of our behalf.
I guess we want to make sure that we have clarified this because of this last question. There are 53 jailers. In order to put one jail staff 24 hours a day in that, the numbers would go from 53 to 59. Okay, so it's not just one more to 54, it's six more to 59. Okay.
Okay, so obviously the jail population has peaks. Usually it's on the weekends. Oktoberfest was extraordinarily annoying to me this year. It usually is anyway, but it was very annoying this year. And that, for example, on August 20th, which is way before Oktoberfest, there were 243 inmates in the jail on Monday morning, which is way over the number that we're supposed to have in there. And the average Monday population between August and October was 225 people. Obviously, the capacity, as we said earlier, is 174, so we were 51 inmates over capacity. These are the steps that we are planning on either asking for to take or to take over the next, some of them have started already, and over the next few days, weeks, months.
I think we all worked really hard during the jail renovations to really pay attention to the philosophy that we have here in La Crosse County with regard to jail use. And we sort of dropped the ball when the facility opened. Everybody takes a breath. And there's that old adage, if you build it, they will come. And if you build a jail, you will fill it, unless you manage it. And so we sort of
sort of took a breath, and the management part of this sort of declined, in my opinion. And so we have to once again be vigilant in our management of this very, very expensive and important resource. So part of the reason that we incarcerate individuals and are in the jail, one is a treatment court holds. We have a magnificent record in La Crosse County of really dealing with people's issues so that recidivism, so that we're not spending the same dollars over and over again and not getting anything back. Treatment courts help us do that. OWI court, drug courts. But in order for those courts to function, those courts need to have jail space to be able to hold some of those individuals who are not complying with the program. Some of those individuals are in the jail. We have a system of child support collection. Unfortunately, for those who do not meet their parental responsibilities to pay their child support, we're very limited in what we can do to enforce the court's orders that those supports be paid. One of the ways we do that is with a contempt action. And the contempt action says you may purge your contempt by paying your support, but if you don't, you're in the jail. It's important for you to understand that when it's contempt, they're not working off their child support. They're sitting in the jail on contempt, and when they walk out, they still owe the same amount of money they did when they came in. We also have another collection type of activity that we use our jail for. There are county warrants. There are monies that are owed to the county as a result of criminal and traffic and ordinance convictions. Individuals are ordered to make the payments. Again, if they don't make the payments, they're in contempt. One of the ways we deal with contempt is jail. Again, the individual sits in our jail, but when they walk out of the jail, they still owe us the money. So it is a way to try and impose the payment of those fines. Now, these are not necessarily safety issues. And so we've decided that the sheriff and I will work with each other to see what we can do about reducing those numbers that do not have to do with safety. They have to do with holding people accountable. And we can hold people accountable. We can just move the calendar a little bit to be able to do it when we have the space. Not that we're not going to impose those contempt orders and hold people accountable. Municipalities also are owed fines, and they use our jail as a collection point. They will fine people in contempt, and they will send out warrants, and those individuals are arrested, and they also sit in the jail. And they sit in the jail just like others do for contempt. If they pay the fine, they have purged their contempt, and they can leave. If they haven't purged the fine, they sit a certain number of days. But when they walk out, they still owe the money. Okay. So we have notified some of the municipalities, and we will be talking at the Criminal Justice Management Council about what to do about the amount of money that other municipalities pay us. And I will tell you that I have had one conversation with the municipal judge of La Crosse, the city of La Crosse, and they're looking very seriously at this use of resource, because when you do the cost-benefit analysis, what we charge them, they're not making back on those fines. So we really have to relook at how we collect money from individuals using a very expensive resource of jail to get that accomplished. The other thing that happens is an individual may be in the jail for many reasons. They may have a municipal warrant. They may have a probation hold. They may have a sentence that they're serving. They may have a child support order that's outstanding. And we had in the past been running all those consecutive. That is, you serve your sentence, and when your sentence is finished, if you have a child support warrant, then you start serving the child support warrant. And when that's done, if you still owe the municipality money, we start running the municipality money. And what happens is the individual sits more time in our jail, but they still haven't met their obligation. They haven't paid. So we're at this point working to see what we can do about running concurrent, that is, at the same time, some of these holds. Not the sentences. not those individuals who are sentenced for crimes. We're not talking about those individuals. We're talking about this other level of individuals who inhabit our jail, not because they have committed a crime, but because they have violated a responsibility to pay money or to get a drug test. The Department of Corrections also uses our facilities, and they use our facilities for holds and for extended supervision. And the first action step that they have taken is those individuals who were here for supervision have been moved to another facility. The sheriff is going to meet with the Department of Corrections supervisors to determine sort of a target number so that we talk about, again, not individuals that they're just angry at, but individuals that are a threat to our safety and our security. And those are the individuals that should be in the jail. This is not an easy decision. And I'm a little bit more Pollyanny than some of my other members of the Criminal Justice Management Council and some others. But I really do have a lot of faith in what we do in this county to protect ourselves with our safety and yet maintain our hand on the pocketbook so that the dollars don't fly out without getting us back some in return. I want to share with you the part of the reason I'm so optimistic. It is because of a supportive county board, a supportive Criminal Justice Management Council, and a legacy that was started many years before I got here of us working together cooperatively to resolve our problems. As I prepared to come and speak with you today, I, of course, went to the Journal Sentinel, and the first article that I saw was, County Board moves to shift oversight of House of Corrections. In Milwaukee County, they don't have a sheriff like we have. Their sheriff never comes to the meetings. Their sheriff says, judges are soft. Their sheriff has no idea what it takes for the system as a whole to operate to make things work. We do. If not for this sheriff and the cooperation of the Criminal Justice Management Council and your understanding and support, we would be a less safe community, and our pocketbooks would be digging deeper for a lot more money to house people to put them away. We ask your indulgence at this point because some of the things that we're recommending may sound a little off, but trust us to understand that we understand that the safety of this community is number one. And as the sheriff pointed out, we have issues. We have strong, difficult issues to deal with. The mentally ill in the courts has skyrocketed, and the issue of heroin on our streets is getting worse and worse. And we are not going to incarcerate away those problems. Those are problems that we as a community are going to have to work together to resolve. And part of that is not just closing our eyes and thinking that we can just put everybody in jail. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we cannot spend our way out of this, especially in more jail beds. So we are here tonight to give you the information and to answer your questions.
So those questions start with Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When I was on Criminal Justice Management Council, one of the topics that we talked a lot about was whether arrest policies impacted the jail population, and we never really got our hands around that. Have we made any progress in that regard?
That's the
use the microphone, please, whoever's
sorry.
Answering.
That's all right. Thank
I
you.
Forgot. I think that was that first slide or the first three slides when we talked about, you know, the index and the non-index crimes, and the one where that one non-index crime was so much higher than other counties. And I think that's where we're going to start looking to see, is there something different about La Crosse County that would, is it the arrest policies? Is it just that we have more crime? I mean, that I think that is going to come out more now than what it ever has.
I guess the second part of my question would be, recognizing that, have we initiated any discussions with our local police agencies, for example?
Yep. The
think he's a captain now. Sean Coudron has been active on the Criminal Justice Management Council, and so he's very interested in this. He met with me for about an hour and a half last week sometime just to talk about it. I think he's extremely interested in it and is communicating with the chief about what's going on and the assistant chief. So I think that there is some pretty active interest in trying to look at what's happening.
Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Doyle took my first question. That's okay. I really miss being on Criminal Justice Management Council. It's an extremely effective group and has done so much. But I have a couple of questions. The Tribune article indicated that there was a waiting list for programs. Would it be possible to expand our programming staff? Would that not be cheaper than looking at hiring more jailers? And would that help get people out sooner? And the second question, are there enough justice sanction employees who could also help get people out sooner and possibly cost less than jailers? And then on things like treatment holds, child support, failure to pay fines, is there another step we could go to outside of jailing them, like putting a person on house arrest for the treatment court hold? Because you can already test them for alcohol and drugs in their home. So if you could further restrict their actions, would that or their movement, would that help?
I think part of the thing that you have to remember is, starting with treatment courts, that there are steps.
Yes.
Okay. So by the time the judge gets to a point, or the treatment court gets to a point where they want to institute the jail, they have tried a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. So it isn't a one or the other thing. It is about trying to manage a population that you're using a lot of different tools. The same thing goes for programming in the jail. The population that we're talking about controlling is not population that's going to be controlled by giving them more programming. We aren't necessarily keeping people in jail so that they, because there's a waiting list for them to do their programming. That's not what's happening. There is obviously a need for programming for general recidivism. There's generally a need for justice sanctions to have every opportunity they have to manage the population that they have. But I don't want to get that confused with this particular problem, because this particular problem is about managing a population that's coming in and out of the jail, that's being used the jail for a reason other than its intended purpose, which is to maintain the security of our community. So one of the options that we are utilizing, for instance, in the child support arena, is a GPS unit, where we make a requirement that individuals go to the job service center, and the GPS monitors that they're at the job service center, that they're going for this job search or that job search, that because they're on a GPS and we have them on justice sanctions, we start monitoring their alcohol and drug use as well. So there are other things that we can use outside of the jail, but I want to make sure that we don't cross-pollinate, so to speak, because the problem here that we're trying to deal with is that population that is coming that isn't going to change because of the programming.
Okay, I understand that, and I understand the step process, but I guess what these things would get at would be getting some of the other jail population out sooner.
Okay.
So I understand you're talking about this certain jail population, which you've well defined. I'm looking at the rest of the jail population. Would those further restrictions or more staff helped the other jailer or prisoners get out?
Sure. We actually reassigned one of the staff people to do more transition work because we realized that this was going to be an issue. And that kind of came out of the transition from jail to community initiative, so that there's a person assigned. I think that there is probably not a person in jail who's been there longer than, you know, a few days that someone hasn't talked to on some level. So I think that that is happening much faster than what it has in the past. And I think there was a meeting today where we had a conversation trying to discuss who is the
best current staff to see when there's a change in someone's status, that the right people could be notified. And the best example I can give for this is if someone is in jail on a cash bond and a probation hold and child support, and if one of those things goes away, like a cash bond, and now they have a signature bond, can we do something with the child support and the probation hold to fulfill that? So we're trying to figure out who are the best current staff to do that. And in the meeting today, we have a tentative plan to sort that out, because right now I'm looking at that twice a week, and I don't think ongoing I'm the best person to have that, to look at that twice a week because of a lot of reasons. But we're trying to figure out who are the people that can do that, whether it's jail staff or someone within Chemical Health and Justice Sanctions. So we are trying to figure that piece of it out. And is it more staff or is it reassigning staff? I don't have the answer for that right now. And part of that is, you know, if we can manage this with the staff we have, then we don't need to hire anybody.
Okay, thank you. And then finally, I know you're doing things like garnishing wages and intercepting tax refunds, and those are both helpful for the people who are not paying fines or child support. Is there any further you can go in that arena?
Well, some counties are using collection agencies, and that's something that we'll have to explore. I think the municipalities are going to have to think about that as well. Nobody likes to do that because of the fees that are assessed, but that will be something that will have to be taken a look at.
Okay, thank you. And I just have one other question. What was the old jail capacity? Now we're at 174.
Well, it would be 195. By the old jail, if you're talking about the 90, what we built in 97?
Yes.
It would be 80% of 172. And so I have to do some quick math, but that would be roughly 34.
Plus the female jail?
Yeah. Well, 120? 120?
If it was 80% of 172.
Okay, so how about 120?
Okay, so we have approximately 54 more opportunities than we used to have.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, thank you. I think all of these things you've presented are all very good ideas, and I think they'll help a lot. Thank you.
Mr. O'Malley, were you wanting to add something?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify for the board. We're going to, if these action steps help to control the population and the sheriff and presiding judge can agree that we don't need to open up that additional pod, we will come back with recommendations that may include any combination of those things. If we don't have to open up the pod, if we don't have to do all six jail positions, which is to get that round the clock, I have assured the sheriff we will ask for recommendations. Are there other ways of utilizing that money? So it's not either or, it's not all or nothing. Obviously, my preference will be to advocate for roads, but if the if some dollar amount of that line item can be used for doing some of the other things that Supervisor Hampson or others have talked about, then may be able to modify that instead of fully staffing that pod. That will be a decision and a recommendation that we'll bring to you, but the county board will make that decision. And while I've got the floor, if you're interested, it's page 37, line 79127 is that dollar amount that we've set aside. So I just wanted to interject that we still are looking at, will this plan work, and if we can postpone having to open up that, you will still make the decision how to utilize that funding.
Supervisor Veenstra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In talking to people in the neighborhoods and things, and just anecdotally around town, there appears to be a great concern about this heroin and the use of painkillers, illicit painkillers, fentanyl, OxyContin, hydrocodone, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm wondering if these
You're
are...
well versed in the names of those drugs, Supervisor Veenstra.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Okay.
I'm just curious if those anecdotes are reflected in the jail population and what percentage, and also, and perhaps even more importantly, then, is this a real thing, or is it just, you know, the newspapers enjoy it? Is there anything we can do on the public health side or working with our health institutions, which have always been extraordinarily open-minded about helping the community when we have problems, to make sure that there is a clear path for people who are obviously hurting, young people that are getting destroyed by these terrible things?
You just hit my wish list. I sentenced, and I'm going to get emotional, and I'm not supposed to because I'm a judge, but I'm Dominican, so that's the way it is. I sentenced a young man to prison last week. And he was anybody's son. He's 16. He's a B student at one of our area high schools. He's doing well. He loves life. But he's a little smaller than the guys on the sporting teams. So he decides that he can't really be as successful as he wants to be. So he drops out of the sports, and there was no other click for him than this group that was involved in drugs. This is a young man who excelled, got an internship to work at one of the area credit unions. He was going places. And he managed to do all that while he was using THC, marijuana, and while he decided to move on to Oxycontin, because parents have it in their medicine cabinets, the kids got it, and the next thing you know, we have a generation that thinks it's okay to do that stuff. But then the Oxycontin got too expensive, and so heroin was cheaper. And there are those who will make the money and sell the heroin. And so he's using the heroin, but heroin, even if it's cheap, if you're an addict, it's expensive. And so he decided to sell. And one of the individuals he sold to died. And last week I sent him to prison for that death. And it struck me as I sat there and did that sentencing that we're doing an awful lot of those kinds of sentencings, not just in our community, but in Monroe County and in other counties. And everyone comes to my courtroom, and everyone cries when it happens, and everyone reads the paper when the headlines come. But then we forget. We forget that these kids are our kids. They're not people that are coming from out of state or out of our communities to do this. These are our kids. And I agree with Mr. Veenstra. We need cooperation from everyone, the schools, the medical facilities, and most importantly, we need it from parents. Because what happened to this family was, it got so bad that this young man's sister said to him, "I can't have you around my kids anymore." But that was the end of it. Imagine if you cannot have your own brother be near your children, and yet you aren't going to take some steps to do something else other than tell him he can't be near your kids. Yeah, heroin is a problem. Mental illness is a problem. But unfortunately, until we work together to address those issues in something more than just having the legislators tell us that we're going to use more and more prison and more jail time to deal with this issue, it's going to get bigger. So that's part of the challenge that we're doing here. We are not, in the Criminal Justice Management Council, I don't believe the philosophy is that we can ignore those problems. But we've had the luxury of living in a community that's been pretty sheltered. But more and more of our kids will die unless we deal with this heroin issue. And it needs to be at home, in each of our homes. And it needs to be outreach. So I welcome the question, and I encourage the board to do anything they can to assist with reaching out to the healthcare community to help us deal with that issue.
Was that it for you, Supervisor Veenstra? Yeah, thank you. Supervisor Schrader?
Thank you. The heroin isn't coming from our local medical facilities, I assume, is it?
The heroin is here. The heroin is everywhere in the state of Wisconsin, and it is in Minnesota. What I'm asking for assistance from the medical facilities is to help our parents recognize what heroin addiction looks like, recognize what OxyContin use looks like, recognize that this young man started because somebody prescribed to him OxyContin after an accident. We have kids that get started down that road because we're not all opening our eyes and thinking that potentially these drugs can lead to addiction other than legal drug use. There is a good reason to have OxyContin. There's a good reason for it. But it should be carefully monitored and prescribed so that it doesn't lead to the kind of addictions that are going on in our communities. That's my point.
Yeah, I agree with that. But somehow the heroin is getting into the community. I assume it's, like you said, it's a statewide problem and out of the state. So what is law enforcement? How do they approach this? How do you guys approach this, you know?
I think that law enforcement may be very much overwhelmed. I think that the reduction of, so to speak, boots on the ground, police officers that are monitoring the neighborhoods, that are walking around and looking and seeing, I think that has decreased. I think that we have all felt that this type of activity was restricted to certain parts of the county, and it's not. They're selling heroin in Bangor, in West Salem, in Onalaska, in Tremplo, and everywhere else. And people are looking the other way because, A, they may not recognize it, or, B, they can't possibly be here. But it's happening. And so any assistance law enforcement can get from citizens would be well needed. You know, Monroe County did a forum on heroin appreciation and understanding of the problem. Not very many people showed up. They did a forum here in La Crosse County as well, in the city. People don't show up. People think it's somebody else's problem. It's not. It's going to fill our jails. It's going to get those six jailers, and it's going to make us less safe because individuals who are addicted to this substance will not stop committing crime until they have that fix. And they will kill other kids who've never used this stuff before but get handed something at a party. Because unlike other drugs, one time will kill you.
I think it's time to end that conversation.
It's a very captivating conversation, and I think Supervisor Veenstra's question is very appropriate. I appreciate the response. I think we need to consider what role the county might play in leading that conversation and leading other action steps. What we heard tonight, though, the action steps that have been outlined are being taken, and what I think we are asking of the county board tonight is to understand that. We've obviously asked some questions of clarification, but to know that it is being worked on. We have a placeholder in the budget that can be tapped into either for staffing in the jail or roads. We will hear more about this, but I think for purposes tonight, I'm going to ask us to draw to a close on this conversation, and if there are other questions to clarify the presentation that was made and any other clarification that may be needed about the work that's being done to reduce the jail population. I think what I heard Judge Gonzalez ask on behalf of the presenters on Criminal Justice Management Council and the system as it were criminal justice system is that we give them time to take these steps and see if they work. We have money in the budget as a placeholder for 13, so there isn't specific action that needs to be taken tonight. I do want to make sure that we get to the other agenda items. So at this point, I'm going to ask if there are any other questions specifically for clarification on the presentation that was made. It looks like Supervisor Schrader still has a question or another one.
Yes. Just a statement, I guess. I've had contact with supervisor from an adjoining county, and he volunteered the fact that they would have open beds at their jails before we take any action. I hope that would be one of the considerations that we look into before we staff like we're proposing.
Mr. O'Malley?
Well, certainly we've been contacted by that adjacent county as well. Obviously, we'll look at all options when we bring a recommendation, but I think you'll rely on the team of folks that have just presented to make a recommendation, and that's why I wanted to reassure the board you will make that decision of what our next steps are. But I also wanted to recognize the three individuals and the team of people they work with for really turning over every rock, every option that we have to make sure that we're making the best decision for the community. So we will look at those options, and we'll ask the sheriff and presiding judge and justice sanctions to make a recommendation in the new year.
Supervisor Downey, you had your hand up earlier.
No.
Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you. I do want to go back for a moment to the issue of the women in the jail and ask if that group is a group that needs to be considered as we go forward. From what I've been able to learn, there are more women in the jail than expected. The tension levels are up, and that the space itself creates certain problems, that the women are much closer now than they were certainly at the old female jail. But perhaps there are bigger space needs that are needed for them. And I understand about the movable chairs and the skylight and the carpeting, but I'm still wondering if there isn't if there isn't the need to develop more space or to consider them in the plans for direct supervision or to work with the women on other types of programming or plans to relieve the space problems.
Perhaps we'll address that at the meeting when we come back with more information. We can get into more detail on the specifics unless Jane feels the need to respond with some specific issues. I mean, we could drill down into that specific population and talk about some of the issues that are there. Appreciate the suggestion, but we'll try to respond to that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else on the jail issue? Thank you very much, Judge Gonzalez, Sheriff Hugison, and Jane Claycamp. Back to you, Mr. O'Malley.
Okay. The next two items that I have, and I'm going to just check with the board, under the idea of updating you on the budget and doing a review, Gary's actually going to hand out the presentation, but I'm going to check with the board with your discretion, Madam Chair. The two items that I have is one of the items that we end up spending just very little time on really is the largest, most complicated budget we have because we do so much as a staff to actually solve a lot of problems, and that's our Human Services Department. What my intent had been is a presentation by Jason on roughly 21 slides that the Human Services Board has seen the entire detail of this to briefly go over all of the strategies that we're using to control and manage the largest and most complicated budget that we have in the county. The second piece is that also included in the handout is the final summary, which are 12 slides that I have. So I'm going to, with the chair's indulgence, I'm going to suggest that what we spend time on this evening is to just conclude with Jason's presentation, that I carry mine over to Monday night at the public hearing, most of which you've seen, and will summarize that, rather than ask Jason to come back later. And that, again, it's a quick presentation. It's very complicated. A whole lot of issues. The full Human Services Board has seen this entire presentation. We abbreviated it for this purpose. But I think it's important that while there aren't a lot of decisions being made by the board within this, to be able to hit the zero levy that we've done for all other programming areas, I can't thank enough the team of Jason Witt, our Human Services Director, Dean Rupert, our operations coordinator, Sarah Koopman, our the head of finance in Human Services, and all of the managers in Human Services that have really done yeoman's work in bringing us a budget that allows us to do what we're doing across the county departments, because it's about the teamwork of everyone working together to try to hit that mark, and Human Services Department has really stepped up this year. So is that acceptable for the board?
Well, let's get through the Human Services one, which I think is appropriate, and then see where we are.
Okay.
So, Jason, Please.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, hello, everyone, and thank you very much for your interest this evening. I'm going to try to use the clicker here.
Is it going
to
click?
Okay.
We need to keep Jane here. She was able to get it.
Okay. Is it the other clicker?
It's the other one.
What's the other one?
I think
that's the trigger on the
there we go.
Okay, well, wanted to start this evening just with a quick snapshot of the human services of budget across 3 years. So we have 2011, 2012, and the 2013 administrator's request there. And the blue lines are the overall aggregate human services budget that includes all funds, Fed, state, and levy. And that's a little misleading by the fact there's a lot of state and federal dollars that go out of there. And that includes, like in 2012, we took on really the budget of eight counties for our IM system that was all added in the La Crosse County budget. So that's actually in terms of...
I'm just going to start you off tonight making sure that you clarify all those lovely alphabet soup items.
Okay, and that's our income maintenance operations, so our eligibility for Medicare, food share, and disability program. I mean, now that we do under a consortia with eight counties. But what's really reflective of the resources that we have for our La Crosse County citizens is the levy amounts that are shown in red. And those have gone down in the last two budget years. We had a 2% decrease, about $214,000 in the 2012 budget. And then again in 2013, we'll have another 2% decrease, in not including the increase that we get for our funding that we provide for MVHS, for the Mississippi Valley Health Consortium, for Western Wisconsin CARES clients there. It's really a $400,000 reduction levy impact on our department's services. And being able to really hold that line and then some by making these reductions and still providing access and the same access to quality human services programming is something we're very proud of. And we understand that we're part of a county team, and being able to do that does free up resources that are sorely needed in other service areas. We also recognize that trend or that financial trend is not a sustainable path. We're really able to weather the storm that we've had over the last few years due to a couple of things. One, we call the big three there, which is collaboration, flexibility, and innovation. Collaborating, even within our own department, which is very large, over 200 employees and five service sections and 31 different units, to make sure we're collaborating across all our service sections and making the most use of our resources. We do that internally. We're doing that more within the community and the service options that are available there, and more even with other county governments in the region. Always being flexible and understanding we're trying to maintain these services for the consumer, and that may mean we need to do something differently, so we maintain that flexibility and the proud tradition that we have of innovation. The presentation, which I'll go through quickly, is a discussion of the budget status and trends over the last few years, what we faced, how we've responded in attempt to really reposition ourselves to continue to provide quality services, and then a brief look ahead in terms of what's in store for 2014. In terms of budget status and trends, really can be summed up, we've had rising costs. We're under extreme inflationary pressures. We have rising community needs, and we'll provide a couple examples of that, and also rising workloads for our workers. Each year, we have annual recurring cost pressures that just each year there's unique inflationary pressures the Human Services Department faces from our contracts that are under inflationary pressures each year. Because we provide mental health and other services, the cost of medical care influences what we do. The cost of children and out-of-home care is an example where we can't control that rate. We're not able to negotiate directly with those providers. The state sets those rates, and those rates have been going up for 2012, for example, a 12% increase. So we maintain the same number of kids next year as we have this year, it's going to cost us 12% more. So really, there's over 300,000 of inflationary impacts on that, and that's a regular incurring thing. So as long as we have a 0% levy increase, it's not maintaining the line. It's actually a cut to the Human Services Department of $300,000 because we got to find a way to meet those increasing costs due to the inflationary pressures. And one of our those pressures is we just haven't had the state and federal funding to keep pace with those inflationary pressures. One of our most important state resource is our community aids funding, which is about $4.5 million a year. What this slide shows, we basically have the same community aids funding in 2012, and we will in 2013, that we did in 2001. So as those pressures go up 12%, 6% every year, that falls back on the county taxpayer, or what it has been falling on, and finding efficiencies to be able to make that up. Help from the state and feds just hasn't been there and hasn't caught up with that. In 2012, that was a big year in terms of cost pressures and the amount of change there was in state and state finances. Won't go through all of these, but really we had over $1 million in either cost increases or funding decreases that we needed to absorb in 2012, and we did that as shown with a 2% decrease in levy. In 2013, we are also facing cost pressures. Some of those include we have an increasing amount of children, OHC, that's in out-of-home care, an increasing amount of children that are in foster care placements, group home placements, and residential caring centers. We've really done a good job, and really a lot of credit to staff over the last couple of years to be able to hold the line on really the high-cost cases and really utilizing the most of community placements. But just the sheer number of children in and out-of-home placement has gone up, and we haven't been able to keep pace in terms of if those children are in out-of-home placement for the most recent 14 out of the 22 months. There is a federal guideline that barring some certain circumstances, a termination of parental rights is done, and those children are removed from the home. What's important in terms of the county's finances is once that TPR is processed, the costs of the child and the adoption resources then transfers to the state. We currently have about 40 children who are past that TPR deadline, but we continue to pay the cost for. Some just aren't appropriate to complete, but some of them we can't keep up with. If you add up all of those, that's about $128,000 a month for that growing population. Also, there's been a sharp increase in just kids in out-of-home care and the services that they need. We're working to control those costs and a lot of other workload challenges there. So certainly a lot of challenges in 2013. Also, a lot of the trends and the discussion that we just heard about in terms of the jail population is also hitting the human services population and has an impact there. We're particularly seeing a lot of negative trends in growing concern within the city of La Crosse with some of the deteriorating neighborhoods and housing. So some of the issues where we're seeing and our workers are seeing as they're out in the neighborhoods, more multifamily habitation. There's more and more. You'll find two families living together, three, four families living together. They don't know each other. That brings young children into contact with more teenage children that they don't know. They're picking up bad habits, more subject to abuse, but this more of the family habitation we're seeing, not a good trend in having an impact on human services. The heroin epidemic is certainly hitting this population. In a time period, we had six children that we had to remove from their home because of an unsafe living situation. All six of those removals during that time period were due to a heroin-addicted moms. So that is having a devastating impact in terms of kids that's served by human services. I've seen a lot more transients in the community where you work with mental health issues or other issues, you really try to connect with their family support network, their friends, their roots in the community. A transient population is harder to deal with. They don't have those roots or more of those natural supports you try to work with. Just more areas of the city also feeling unsafe. This is our children in out-of-home care population. And you can see this goes back to October of 2008, how that's increased, where we've gone from about 100 average in out-of-home care placements to in April 2012 peaking out at 180. That's a 54% increase. At the time, our funding's going down. At a time, we have not added additional workers to the unit that handles and serves those children. So that's incredible workload pressures there. And that comes from the drug epidemic in the community, that comes from the deteriorating neighborhoods. Again, that's borne by the taxpayer, whether it's a West Salem taxpayer or an Alaska taxpayer. And really would just echo the need for the comprehensive county and community approach to those issues. Human services needs and human services resources, very striking if we look at four of the key indicators: children without health insurance, individuals who are receiving food stamps, children in out-of-home care, and homeless students. Marked increase, 147% increase of children without health care, 76% increase individuals in the county on food stamps. And then you see the other trends there. At the same time, the resources that are there to serve those populations, in terms of we looked at community aids, our income maintenance funding that's available to connect people to food stamps, youth aids and shared revenues, all down dramatically. Community aids has remained flat, but the other funding sources have gone down. As this gap grows, it continues to threaten to hollow out our service system. If we become so thin that we can no longer sustain the service level needed to support individuals in the community, our costs explode as those individuals find themselves falling back to institutions. Now, facing those real negative trends over the past years, we've brought to bear, as we continue to reposition ourselves, several solutions how we can continue to serve consumers and clients, and it goes back to the collaboration, flexibility, and innovation. For example, having a really maximizing the use of community-based resources and controlling high-cost placements has saved $460,000. Last year, our reconfiguration of the juvenile detention facility, that was a $387,000 savings. We've merged our on-call systems. We've asked our internal staff to do more that we used to contract out. So a whole host of things in the regionalization of income maintenance across the eight service areas in terms of state and federal funding was an $831,000 savings. So to try to keep pace with all that revenue we're losing with the increasing demands, we're constantly looking how we can do things differently and reposition ourselves. And those were a lot of the things in why we have the quality services we have, is because we're able to do things like this over the past 2 years. In regards to the 2013 budget, we always look at the budget just not as an exercise where we have to find out where we have to shore up and cut down because of we're losing revenue, but also as opportunities, how can we reposition ourselves? And there's some initiatives in the budget where we're taking the opportunity to do that. One of it is the enhancement of the regional service partnerships, our sharing of resources across county lines. The budget request strengthens the Income Maintenance Consortium, which is the Western Region for Economic Assistance. Currently, that's unsustainable in that workers are carrying caseloads over 1,000. There are positions added under the budget leveraging no tax levy but all state and federal resources that will bring the caseloads down to more manageable levels. Also, we begin implementation in this budget of a shared mental health and substance abuse system, begin designing that system with the goal in 3 years, like the income maintenance system, having more of a merged system, and that's with the partners in Monroe and Jackson counties for that, in an initiative that shares services in the in-home safety area. We also strengthen child welfare legal services in trying to bring some resources to bear to keep up with the processing of the termination of parental rights that are leading to some of those issues talked about earlier. As of last year was our first year, we began leveraging state funds available for that, called the 4E Legal Program. In this budget, there's about $50,000 plus then available, mostly state and federal funds to help us with that workload. Very much needed. We just this month we had a quality service review with a whole host of state staff that came down. One of the outcomes of that, they called our Corporation Counsel's office one of the busiest in the state. And last year, having filed a record number of child in protective service petitions, so definitely much needed resources we're going to try to put to bear in the smartest way possible. Also, integration of substance abuse in mental health services. This is not an increase in positions, but we're transferring positions from our Chemical Health and Justice Sanctions section to our Mental Health and Recovery Services section to be able to integrate substance abuse in mental health, because we are finding we have so many co-occurring clients. We're able to utilize under this approach one case plan and one treatment team. And as we merge into a regional mental health and substance abuse system, there's advantages there. So we think at the end of the day, this is going to strengthen the services in that area. And then we also take a step forward in terms of the IT infrastructure for the department, and begin to see the daylight of completing a project that was started about 4 years ago in terms of upgrading our IT system so we can become compliant with electronic health records and the new reporting requirements from the state. So four areas in the budget we think brings us forward and helps us reposition ourselves at the time that we have all these challenges. Connect is the project that is strengthening the IT system and purchasing a software platform. What that is the project that was begun to move to a unified software platform, which means not having a different spreadsheet and a different way to track data across 32 separate units in human services, but to the extent possible, have a unified system. So the core components of that is a single client database. So as we're working with the same family in mental health services as we do in our child protective services, we're able to access that information. In integrated functionality, which means we don't have to piece together a billing system and then buy a reporting system, that we buy one system that's all integrated. It's the same system that the caseworker sits down in and types their notes in. It translates their notes into billing and is able to do that. And also make us electronic health record compliant, and do a lot for us in terms of the manual auditing of files that we currently doing can do be done electronically. So there is approximately $500,000 of fund balance that we're able to use that was previously appropriated for this project for us to complete that project and choose a vendor in this area. And hopefully that'll be implemented where we're targeting for 2014. There are position changes in the budget, and again, this is an area that strengthens us. There is a deletion of the position. We're deleting a vacant secretary position, which is made possible because we've re-engineered the whole way we do lobby services in the department. And instead of having seven different lobby service areas, have consolidated everything in a front lobby service area that has a lot of advantages, but also allows us to free up resources. So we're deleting a secretary position, and the positions that we're adding, all of them except some of the standby positions for the juvenile detention facility leverage state and federal resources. There's a nurse half-time position. Actually, we have a current half-time position we're making into a full-time position for our ADRC. Our quality assistance coordinator systems planner is an expectation of the pilot funding that we have from the state for the mental health and substance abuse initiative. Now we're finding ourselves in the position not just managing a budget for La Crosse County, but managing several consortia budgets that impact services in several counties. So with that comes state and federal resources for a financial manager. And we think standby positions for the juvenile detention facility in the Western Regional Adolescent Center is just a smart investment, because those hours have to be covered either way. So we're taking some savings and overtime funding and instead creating standby positions. And for the first time, that actually can be used seamlessly in both of those facilities. And then we're adding, due to the creative way across eight counties, we're sharing child support functions, adding two new economic support specialist positions. We're able to leverage state and federal funding for that. So fortunate we're able to do that during these challenging times. And for 2013, some of the other solutions we have in terms of repositioning ourselves, we actually were able to turn in a budget surplus in 2011, and being able to re-examine all of those areas in bringing our budget in line with projected spending in light of those surpluses. Also, the decrease of that secretary position. And then we built in some savings because we're making the investment in 4E legal services. If we can increase the number of TPRs we're able to do and reduce that backlog, that's actually will save money, because then the cost of those children will be borne by the state instead of the county. So we're hoping and have budgeted in savings from that initiative. Also, because we are the lead county for our income maintenance initiative and our mental health substance abuse initiative, and we have more positions here in La Crosse County tied to that, it allows us to spread out our administrative costs to those funding sources, which is actually a savings of $95,000. And then the last area is, well, due to a long history in the Department of Sound Financial Management, we have a strong risk reserve and are in the position for 2013 to fall back on that risk reserve and take some financial risks, frankly, we wouldn't take if we didn't have that strong risk reserve to fall back on. And all of these areas are areas that, for child protective services and out-of-home care placements, if they go up, we may have budgeted more money in the budget for that, but because we have a strong risk reserve to fall back on, we didn't. Same with mental health inpatient and a whole host of areas. And these are just some of the areas, actually, that are of risk in the human services budget. There is certainly a possibility, and perhaps a strong possibility, we may need to fall back in that risk reserve in 2013. We'll have to monitor that throughout the year to see how that works. But really, across all its funding sources, it's really smart financial management on the county's part to budget in this way. So looking ahead to 2014, we always have, I think, our eyes and ears in 3 years, the last year to see how that came out and kind of re-examine how we did and how we need to adjust the current year and implementing all our initiatives. And then we have an eye ahead for the next year as well. And as we look at meeting challenges for 2014, we're going to look at what we did in the juvenile detention facility. It's a program, the core program, that allows us to use our facility here instead of state corrections for kids. Once we've got that program very solid, we're going to make that available to other counties, and hopefully that'll be a revenue source for us and also get out good outcomes for those kids. We're exploring additional MA billing opportunities. We're going to do a review of all the community contracts we have in place just to make sure they are matching up with our current needs. We're going to continue to explore the regional initiatives and expand into the area of child care administration and some other areas. The Connect initiative, which is the IT project, will actually free up some time from our fiscal services area. If that time it frees up isn't subsumed from all of the other responsibilities, because we're growing in some areas, there may be some cost efficiencies we'll be able to take advantage of in 2014. Looking at additional ways to maximize our called child long-term support waiver services. services, which is a complex but important funding source from the state, that we're entering some cooperative arrangements with some other counties to be able to maximize there, we hope. And also, hopefully, if we're able to reduce our TPR, termination of parental rights backlog. So already looking ahead to some things for 2014. And just in closing, I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank really the staff and all of the social workers and financial folks in the Human Services Department. They have absorbed a tremendous amount of change in a very short period of time and are really on the front lines every day dealing with all of the challenges in our community. And we've asked a lot of them, and they have delivered tenfold, so we appreciate that.
And thank you for your leadership, Jason. You know, when O'Malley introduces somebody, there's always a little like, okay. But just seeing these slides and understanding just some of the complexities that you have outlined, I am very glad that we took the time this evening to hear about this, because it's so clear that it's been work that's been done over a very long period of time with a lot of thought and consideration. So, and Dean, it's nice to see you here. I'm sorry you didn't get a chance to come to the mic unless somebody has a question that maybe Jason doesn't know the answer to, and Dean will have to come up here. But any questions or comments from supervisors? Supervisor Karen Johnson.
Oh, it's working now. Don't worry. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question about the TPR cases.
Yep.
It's my understanding that the third position in the Corporation Counsel office was created a while ago to help alleviate those. Is it your expectation that the legal services initiative at the state level will keep us from kind of having to do that again to address the backlog of cases?
And I guess I would maybe ask David to chime in. I'm not sure that the position was specifically created because of the TPR background.
Yeah, it was not created for the TPR position. We've had three since I've been there, and one position dealt primarily with CHIPS and TPR cases and child support. Another position dealt with the guardianships and protective placements and a little bit of everything. That's what I used to do. And then the other position was corp counsel. So, yeah, we've just sort of dealt with it, sharing the load, but with one person mainly doing it and then sharing the load.
So it's not something that needs to be addressed at the county level now that we have the opportunity for state funding in these TPR cases.
And actually, we've matched. There's about 40,000 of state. There's pass-through dollars from the feds that the state passes through to us that now we're participating in that program we can receive. And then I believe it's an additional 15,000 of county levy that has been transferred in this area as well. And that combined resource, then it's kind of use it or lose it. If we don't use that on expanding legal services to children, it's very specific what that funding has to be used for. We will lose that. Currently, in terms of how we're addressing that and the TPR strategy, is using those dollars to contract out for legal services to process those TPRs in appropriate cases.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Supervisor Cruz.
I would just like to commend Jason and Dean and the staff of Human Services. I was there as these whammies kept coming down from the state, and you know, everybody being in a big tizzy, oh, you know, we're getting cut here and there. But these guys kept stepping up to the plate and coming up with innovative ways to absorb those cuts and do things more efficiently and really positioning us, you know, with efficiencies that will lead us well into, you know, the next year and the years to come. And I just think they've done a wonderful job. I mean, they've been given straw and they've turned it into gold again and again. So I think, you know, we really are lucky to have them.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Supervisor Laundrie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This might be a silly question, but I don't intend for it to be. What is a homeless student?
Okay, that's that comes from the state DPI, Department of Public Instruction website, and they count what's reported as children who are homeless, that are students in the La Crosse Public Schools. So that particular number is the La Crosse Public Schools in the number of homeless, their homeless census for, I believe, the current year compared to last year.
Seeing no other questions, thank you again very
much. Okay. Oh, just one more thing, because sure. With the strategy you talked about as well, what I forgot, there's a very important second piece of that, and that's the long history of the La Crosse County Board to be able to support and make critical investments. And there certainly are boards around the state that wouldn't approve positions, whether or not they're state or federal funded. But this board has always got it. It makes sense to make investments into community services, because institutional services cost much more, but more importantly, do not serve the client as well. And to have that support is a big reason why we're in the position that we are today. So thank you for your continued support and willing to make those investments.
Thank you.
Okay,
thanks. Mr. Manley.
And Madam Chair, then with the board's indulgence, I can do my presentation in about 15 minutes. So if people want me to finish that instead of carrying it over, as I suggested, I didn't know how long that part of the presentation would go.
So let's try to, we're going to hold you to that 15 minutes. I'm seeing from the back of the room 10.
10, yeah. Ginny, if you could bring that up. You actually have this as a handout. It's really kind of the final wrap-up before we go into public hearing and final deliberation. I guess it's even quicker if the whole thing clicks out. Just to remind you, to achieve the 0% impact that we talked about really is spread across departments, but not an equal percentage. Some departments needed to go up. There was no choice, while others were able to absorb decreases. Position attrition in many departments, and success by Human Services Department in particular, was critical to us being able to shift roughly 400,000 of additional resources to highway within the existing 0% levy before we even talk about the 1.1% increase. The health of our employees and being self-insured allowed us to be in a position to have the third year in a row of no increase in health insurance. If we were fully insured by an outside company, they would have been demanding an increase regardless of that, and they would have seen the savings, not the county. Self-management of health insurance claims has really benefited the county over many years, and our employees becoming a more engaged partner in trying to improve their own health through health risk assessments and other types of things that we're doing really have shown benefits to us. I dare say that I'm not aware of any other counties that we compare to that are able to do 3 years in a row of no increase in health insurance and still be able to meet claims, be able to meet costs each year. And that's why I believe the 2% wage increase that we've budgeted for 2012 and 2013, consistent with Act 10 of the legislature's boundaries, is affordable for us to be able to do with each of those items combined. We continue to rely on the strength of our fund balances, but not are overly reliant, and generally are for one-time costs. We don't use operations costs paid for with fund balance. We do take some risks, as Jason and Dean were able to touch on, but we use the strength of that to not end up asking for an increase in property tax levy. And we're not highly reliant on increased user fees. You will have a number of debates on some relatively small items to the overall budget that generate a lot of interest and a lot of concern. Those are policy issues. However you end up debating those will not have a significant impact to the bottom line of property taxes for the budget. The main achievements, as I've talked about before, is that after 3 years of a 0% operating levy, our budget would increase by only 1.1%, targeted to the specific item that we spent most of the evening talking about. Leaving the operating rate at 3.13, we are $482,000 below the limit, and we expect to stay. Actually, I've got to change that because I'm going to show you we're not going to be fifth lowest per capita. We'll drop to fourth. We've got new information. So if you did make some tweaks or some changes in the administrator's budget that increase cost, you could still stay under your levy limit. If, for example, you eliminated a user fee or added a line item, you still have some room to work without necessarily cutting another line item, and that is your choice. The $400,000 increase in highway maintenance and the $4.9 million County Trunk Highway OA project is the largest and most ambitious single-year project we've been able to do. It's a safety project. We're able to put that together, get it done in 1 year, and will really benefit travel from the south side of La Crosse to the other side of our county. It's well needed. It will be a great enhancement, and we'll be able to do that within this budget. Finally, the 2013 budget sets the stage for future decisions that you will be asked to make. Obviously, jail staffing or highway maintenance or some combination of that that we talked about quite a bit. The future of Lakeview, who we serve, sizing and location, administrative building planning and addressing the deferred maintenance in this building. And finally, it does increase highway funding, but much more is needed based on the increased inflationary cost of just the materials alone, rising at 70% over just the last 7 years. This demonstrates the annual levy change that while we have had now 0% for each of the last 3 years for operating, the increase in 2010-2011 was entirely due to increased debt service for paying for the law enforcement center, and then the 1.1% in 2013 is a decision that you will need to make that is targeted towards highway maintenance or jail. This is the latest information that I have, and I didn't update that last slide. Mary Powell in our finance department does additional research and goes above and beyond so many times. This is an example where, based on the proposed percentage change of the 10 lowest counties per capita, if you adopt the budget at 1.15% and the other counties adopt the budgets that they have, we will drop to fourth lowest per capita in the state from fifth. The main shift was Chippewa County, which is proposing a 4.8% increase. They're able to do that under the levy limits because they are finally instituting consolidated dispatch and taking that off of the city property taxpayers. Of course, La Crosse County did that 30 years ago, roughly. So our comparison, we're already taxing dispatch on a countywide basis rather than the individual cities. From best of my knowledge, Eau Claire already has consolidated dispatch. I believe Ozaukee does. Grant, I'm not aware of. But that is the main difference was Chippewa leaped ahead of us by entering the same level of service that we have, and we will, if you adopt the proposed percentage, be fourth lowest per capita in 2013. And shows that even if you made a small change in the budget either way, we would still maintain that position if the other counties adopt the budgets as proposed. So we're very similar to what the other counties are doing, with the exception of Chippewa County. In addition to that, I've shared with you that while we utilize debt aggressively in different areas, some of the differences for us, of course, is that we have a law enforcement center addition is almost half of our debt. We have solid waste debt. Many counties do not operate their own landfill or operate a waste-to-energy facility, but, of course, you're not using property taxes to pay for that. That is your largest set of user fees. It's through the solid waste department. The tipping fees pay for that. And, of course, we're relying more on debt for highway construction, as we've talked about, and those payments right now are being serviced from the strength of our highway department fund balance. I illustrated this a while earlier, and this shows our projection into the next several years of utilizing debt. Once we pay off the old LEC, that blue part of the bar, we accelerated some of our payments in this current year to reduce as much debt as we could. In 2015, when we're done paying off the old LEC, we'll start to rely on debt more for roads and able to use the same amount of debt that payments that we're doing and shifting it into paying for roads. But starting in 2015, we will start to have to raise that if we are going to maintain the level of road spending that we're spending now, which is slated in 2014 to be $3 million a year. That will not keep up with the actual needs of highways that we've talked about. We are underfunding road maintenance by about $1 million, $1.2 million a year of just day-in, day-out road maintenance. And if you check in the back of your budget, you see about $37 million worth of unmet road needs that will not be able to be sustained within this, even by increasing that green bar. So there was talk at the executive committee last week, information about the wheel tax. We'll present that information to you next week. It was also at the Public Works Committee today as well. We won't spend a lot of time on that, but it is not in the county administrator's budget, but it is an option that board members have asked to talk about. It would generate, if you were to do it similar to St. Croix County, a significant amount of money, but it wouldn't end up solving all of your budget problems, but obviously it's an ongoing discussion. So the decisions that you'll be asked to be make this month, whether or not you accept the 1.1% increase that's in the county administrator's budget, you could still choose to say, no, zero has to happen, and we are not going to leave that placeholder in. That's page 37, account 79127. There was some confusion, I believe, by some constituents that read that article that the 314 is either for highway maintenance or jail staff. I guess one supervisor got a call from a citizen who thought that somehow that was tied to the wheel tax. We can't use the wheel tax for jail programming or jail staffing. The wheel tax is completely independent and would require a separate action by this body through an ordinance to actually impose. You'll also have two resolutions that will deal with positions, decreases of savings to tax levy of almost two full-time positions across a number of different departments, and increases in positions by almost four with outside funding. In addition, you'll have a health insurance rates resolution and non-union compensation matching union compensation increase for 2013. And last but not least, you'll have a master list of fees and changes resolution. For the most part, there hasn't been a lot of controversy. There are a couple of key items that Planning, Resources, and Development have had some lengthy debates about. You'll end up debating that as well by the full board. Other changes in health, medical examiner, and human services that haven't caused as much discussion. I've heard a previous board member talk about how the reason that we're low per capita is somehow we have a high number of user fees. That is not the case. We classify a number of things as user fees that other counties might not classify the same way. Solid waste is obviously the largest amount. Hillview and Lakeview are user fees when there's a private pay or another pay source other than Medicaid. That's classified as a user fee. And Human Services, of course, does everything they possibly can to slate what's called a user fee, but most of the time it's tax levy and federal and state resources. The true user fees are really in the general fund and library, aging, and health. Those are where users of an individual service get to make a choice of whether or not to use a fee. So, for example, in the general category would be the farmland preservation fee that's caused a lot of discussion and debate within Planning Resources. That's only 24,000 of that number. So while we try to be creative on utilizing outside revenue and trying to maximize user fees, we aren't highly reliant on it. We use it where we think it's appropriate, where you as a body have set those fees that are appropriate. But again, the most significant numbers are in Hillview and Lakeview and solid waste, not traditionally what someone might think of a permit fee or a user fee for a septic system or a license or that type of thing.
You're coming up on your 15. I don't want to extend it, but what does that right column represent?
The percentage of total of the 24.9 million
of the levy. So that's the
$24,959,000 are the total amount of fees and charges that we administer through that green catalog that you get. 13% of.
So you're saying solid waste's fees and charges are 36.9% of all fees and charges that we assess as a county. Thank you.
And someone had made the comment that we levy $25 million worth of budgeted fee, of user fees, and that's why our tax levy is down. No, we're using user fees where they're appropriate, and many counties don't have a solid waste department. Thank you. Sorry about that. And then we did a pie chart just to kind of help you identify that the vast majority of fees and charges are to users in those two areas, solid waste and the nursing homes. And the last slide is that board decisions during 2013 that you'll be asked to consider. We'll be bringing back the Lakeview study and making recommendations and presenting policy choices for you during the first quarter of 2013. If we utilize debt to make those decisions, we're expecting debt to actually be paid for from the revenue stream. We won't need new tax levy to service debt if we build a replacement for Lakeview. Highway maintenance or jail staffing, we've talked quite a bit about this evening. Administrative building evaluation of options, with your permission, we'll use A&E services to evaluate remodeling in this building or replacing it. Highway capital projects will continue to be an ongoing issue, but just as you approve bonding tonight for the 2012 budgets, we'll capital projects for highway, we'll be asking you to do the same thing in 2013 with the first payment starting in 2014. but it's the most ambitious project that we've had during my tenure, certainly, and prior. And last but not least is continuing to examine highway options for 2014 and beyond. There are no easy answers when road inflation far exceeds standard CPI, and we'll continue to be challenged with either declining road conditions and or trying to find a way to make that up. So I think I got close to 15 minutes, maybe it was slightly
13.
Longer. 13. Wow.
Should we all just have a two-minute pause to give it? Yeah.
I can go
questions,
back and talk more in detail.
Questions
about
or comments of Mr. O'Malley on the presentation, the 13-minute presentation? Hearing none.
And the last two items we have, actually one is your item, yeah. Which you have a memo about budget amendment instructions, and then an open floor to see if there are items that we need to report back to the board during budget deliberation next week, coming out of committee, so that we can be prepared if there are items that we have not touched on or anticipated.
Yep, and the budget amendment instructions is the green sheet that was in your packet. Just reminder to all of us that it is especially helpful to do that ahead of time. Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think this is appropriate for the next week and a half, because I don't want to overburden our staff. But I noticed, you mentioned it, for a few months now we're using moderate uses of our fund balances. And I guess I would like to see, not so much by next week, but sometime this year, maybe a planning meeting where we can get like a 10-year running total of all of the major fund balances and like a line graph that shows a 10-year trend on all of our major fund balances in terms of the balances and where they're going.
Yeah, we can look at 10-year. I don't know how much that will tell us. We do a 3-year running average so that you actually see that detail of our use of fund balance. And each year you get that comprehensive two-page.
I guess I'd like to see more of a trend. I know
sure.
I sees that shows.
Let me see what we can
years.
Do. I don't know if 10 years would be as useful, but we do bring this back to you, of course, so you do see how we compare year in, year out. And certainly, let's work on something like that.
More of a macro scan of multiple years, not just
let's
not
see
just
what
a
we
couple.
Can do. Yeah, let's see what we can do.
Thank you.
Anything else on the budget? Anything on this this kind of ambiguous last item, which is directions on budget issues by supervisors? I think it's not a surprise, especially to folks who serve on PR&D, that the issue of the farmland preservation fee is likely to come to the full board. I am not aware of other specific items or amendments that are being considered at this point. So, again, the intent in all of this background work and the work in committees is to make sure that we all come to the deliberations next week with as much information as possible and ready to cast our votes. So if you are planning something, please work through the process that's outlined in that memo. Executive Committee is meeting again Wednesday of this week, and there might be items coming out of that meeting. But my goal is to try and make the budget decision-making process as smooth as possible. To that end, since I'm not seeing any other hands go up, my look at the initial draft of the agenda for the 12th and 13th, so following the public hearing next Monday night and into the following morning, starting at 9, just for anybody who doesn't have those dates already in their calendar, it looks to me like, and again, unless there are a bunch of amendments coming that I haven't heard about, I'm not sure that we're going to be here at lunchtime on Tuesday. So the general plan right now is, and we're always flexible, and this may change following the completion of all the committee meetings this week, but the intent would be to hold the public hearing starting at 6 on Monday night, the 12th. Then when that is done, to move into the regular agenda items, as has been our typical practice. That agenda does not look lengthy. So I don't know, again, you know, depending on how late the public hearing goes, I don't think it's going to be a very late night on Monday night. We'll try and get through as much as we can and then come in Tuesday morning, starting with the budget. It's very possible that if that goes as quickly as it appears to me, I'm jinxing it now probably, but that we would take a recess of some kind to give staff the time that they need to do the calculations on setting the levy rate, but I don't anticipate that that's going to be at lunchtime on next week. So just so you maybe bring a snack or something. So when we take that break, I could be wrong, but it doesn't look like it's going to be a long meeting on Tuesday. Yes, Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When will the board packets be ready?
The clerk is whispering back here about there's this minor thing called an election tomorrow that they then have to do a canvass on Thursday morning.
Well, I know we're
so we're anticipating Thursday afternoon.
Thursday afternoon. So I can pick it up then to have it over the weekend is what I'm getting.
Yeah, for sure you'll have it over the weekend. It's just whether it'll be Thursday afternoon or not until Friday morning, I think, is the hesitation in giving a definitive answer. Okay. And we can send out a notice to let folks know. The intent will be to get it done by Thursday afternoon. It will depend on the canvas and the clerk's office staff heavy load this week. Any other questions? Excellent. I'm thinking Supervisor Berg has a motion he'd like to make that relates to ending the meeting. Moved by Supervisor Berg to adjourn, seconded by Supervisor Holtz. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned with the thanks of the chair and a reminder that there is an election tomorrow. If you haven't already voted, please do so tomorrow. And Supervisor Cruz is reminding us to turn in your being a